ourselves. What's up, Wisconsin? Happy Monday, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. This afternoon, we're going to do a deep dive into reproductive theology and its consequences. This springs, of course, from the Alabama Supreme Court's recent decision, came down last Monday, March 4th, that concluded that since, according to Alabama's constitution, which was recently amended, since human life begins at fertilization, embryos are people, and a person who dropped frozen embryos at an IVF clinic in Alabama, if those two predicate things are facts, according to Alabama's constitution, that life begins at fertilization and that embryos are people, therefore, a person who dropped a test tube with two fertilized embryos in it in Alabama could be sued for wrongful death. That was the Supreme Court decision. We're going to talk about it on this show because there's simply so much to talk about. I am really humbled and blessed to be joined at the bottom of this hour by my dear friend Colleen, who is herself going through an IVF process and has, she's pregnant and the pregnancy's going well. And I wanted to bring somebody on that's been through that experience because it's so challenging for families that are experiencing fertility challenges. And then once they decide to go through that IVF process, boy, it can be an expensive, heart-wrenching journey. And why is that important? It's important because as soon as that Alabama decision dropped, patients all across the state were getting calls saying, your embryo implantation is not going to occur, and we don't know when it will. So I want to talk about all that. And listen, we're going to relate this. I'm going to tie this all up like I always do. This relates to Senator Katie Britt's GOP rebuttal after the State of the Union. It relates to some incredible things that were said this past weekend on George Stephanopoulos' Sunday morning news show on ABC. There's so much here because it's not just about IVF. We don't get here to this place and this decision by the Alabama Supreme Court without the Dobbs decision, do we? Right? I mean, without Dobbs, they're not even having this discussion in Alabama. And remember, the Dobbs decision, that's what Trump brags about. He's the abortion banner. He's the guy that made it possible for the Dobbs decision to come down. And also remember, the Supreme Court is going to hear and decide whether or not mifepristone should be widely available in the United States in the way that it is currently. Mifepristone is an abortifacient drug. It's used in all sorts of circumstances, not just to begin or terminate to begin an abortion or terminate a pregnancy. We have 11 states currently in this country that have considered or are considering or have changed their laws to declare that personhood begins at fertilization. This has been the cornerstone of the anti-abortion, the anti-choice movement. That personhood begins at fertilization. And if that's true, this is the place that we end up. That's the logical conclusion of that argument. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Now, here's what's interesting. For example, ProPublica found out that in Tennessee, anti-choice activists told Tennessee legislators, please don't start talking about IVF. Let's wait for a while. Let's wait for a few years after Dobbs. Because they know that there's going to be backlash to these kinds of decisions. But that's the consequence of making arguments like this, that substitute religion for rationality and science. You end up with absurd results. And I don't have any problem with people who believe in a religion, who says abortion is not right and that they choose for themselves to not get an abortion. That's the freedom of choice. That's what we do here. But you cannot take your religion and impose it upon others. Because religions are not uniformly opposed to abortion. That's, I mean, I don't know how much more simply I can break this down. 855-75-CIVIC. 855-75-CIVIC. If you, someone you love, have been through the IVF process, if you want to talk about this in a kind and respectful way, give me a text or a call. 855-752-4842. My dear friend Colleen's going to be joining at the bottom of the hour to talk about her family's experience with this. I haven't been through it, so I'm not going to talk on that. But again, I just... Let's talk about what different religions think about this, right? Much of this idea, Catholics, though not a huge majority in the United States, seem that the Catholic Church's teachings on this seem to be given a lot of airtime, if you will. And they have said very clearly that life begins at conception. It came out in a 1987 document called the Donum Vitae, which is the Vatican's doctrine-setting arm. And therefore, the Catholic Church forbids IVF. Now, I was raised Catholic. Most of the Catholics I know are what I call buffet-line Catholics. And what I mean by that is some of these things that are inconvenient for the way that we'd like to live our lives, we just go, well, I don't believe in that. In other words, we pick and choose from the Catholicism buffet, and we work with those things that work for us. Smorgasbord Catholics. Most Catholics I know would be like, what do you mean the Catholic Church forbids IVF? What? We look at Judaism.
I'm right here.
Jewish leaders across the ideological spectrum, and there's Reform Jews, there's Conservative Jews, there's a big spectrum here. But in general, most Jewish thought leaders have supported IVF and assisted reproduction. Now, some segments of Judaism, the most conservative, right, oppose IVF.
And to be clear, there's a group called the Conservative Movement.
Yes.
Not those guys, but when we're saying like ultra orthodox in that interpretation of our side, yeah, you get into
some pretty strict rules about almost everything.
The same group of folks who say you can't have a pet dog will say you can't do IVF. So take it with the grains of salt you need. Yeah.
Yes, but the vast majority of at least U.S. Jews are Reform Jews who embrace IVF. Methodists embrace IVF. Those unaffiliated with any religious organization, though still identifying as Christian in this country, they embrace IVF. But here's what. And I'm going to get to the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, because the guy is eyebrow-raising, to say the least, uncomfortable, maybe even creepy, which seems to be the new theme for the GOP. Everybody seems to be pretty creepy these days. What this guy has said should frighten everyone. But in this decision on IVF, finding that embryos are people, and that if you destroy an embryo, even unintentionally, you can be sued for wrongful death, as if you shot and killed someone, which seems to me to just fly right in the face of common sense. He cites Thomas Aquinas. Well, isn't that interesting? Charles Camosi, who teaches bioethics and moral theology at Creighton University School of Medicine in Nebraska and St. Joseph Seminary in New York, said that Aquinas was among the thinkers of his era who believed the human soul in the fetal stage goes through stages, including vegetable state and animal state, before becoming human with a rational nature. Also, Thomas Aquinas believed that male fetuses become, quote, rational before female ones do. I'm so glad that the Alabama Supreme Court is relying so heavily on Thomas Aquinas. Here's what Professor Camosi said, quote, to cite Thomas Aquinas in support of the value of the early embryo is, at the very least, tone deaf. I should say so. And human beings have been having this debate since the Middle Ages. You go to writings from the Middle Ages. There is a debate about whether it's 40 days or 80 days before the time period when a soul actually enters the fetus and it becomes fully human. The Middle Ages, people. But all of a sudden now, the Alabama Supreme Court, Justice Alito and his cronies on the Supreme Court of the United States, now they know one of the greatest debates of all of humankind, of all of recorded human theological history. Do they also believe, as Aquinas did, that the male fetus becomes rational before the female fetus does? I inquiring minds want to know. Do I have time for Dennis from Fitchburg?
Yeah, I think you do, yeah.
All right, Dennis from Fitchburg, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say?
Hi, this is a first-time caller.
Welcome.
And my feeling is that it is entirely up to the family. And especially if it's a illegal, if you wish, contraception.
What do you mean by an illegal Dennis, what do you mean by an illegal contraception? Oh, okay.
Rape.
I see.
Illegal conception.
Yeah. Incest and the like.
And an accident that happened,
yeah.
If you will.
Yep.
So I just wanted to put that in there.
Thanks, Dennis. I think that's, listen, Dennis is saying what I think most people, it's a very commonsensical approach. There are troubling circumstances by which women become pregnant every day all across this country. And once we start going down the slippery slope of having perfect insight into when a human being becomes a human being, the thing that's been debated since recorded human history was a thing, we end up in a place where it becomes very difficult for our laws and our system of how we relate to one another, even on a cultural everyday basis, get strained beyond common sense. And Donald Trump and others in the Republican Party have said, no, we're going to ban abortion. And even in cases of rape or incest or failed birth control, we got to. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Just heard from Dennis in Fitchburg, first-time caller. Dennis, love to have the first-time callers. You, too, can join our conversation. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. I'm going to be joined at the bottom of the hour by my dear friend Colleen, who is happily and joyfully pregnant and went through an IVF process to become pregnant. We're going to get her to share a little bit about what that process has been for her and her family, what she thinks about the Alabama Supreme Court ruling. Dennis brought up before the break, listen, common sense dictates that women should be able to choose what goes on with their pregnancy and their bodies, especially in the cases of rape and incest and failed birth control. And the problem becomes, of course, you start having to police the circumstances under which a woman may have become pregnant. And I don't think our democracy can bear that kind of inquiry. Could you imagine if every man who wanted a Viagra prescription had to go through some sort of inquiry about if they can be a responsible parent, if their wife is still of childbearing age? Are they in fact married? Why would you like to have children, et cetera? In other words, what is your tent in getting Viagra? We wouldn't police male sexual behavior in this way. Why are we doing so with women? There's a fundamental equity problem here. I began with the fact that there's this presumption that religions universally have certain teachings or philosophies, not just about IVF, but about abortion and when an embryo becomes a human being, and that there's scientific. And all of that is bunk. There's not universal consensus. Now, I don't have a Catholic theologian on the show today, but make a note on you. We're going to get one. Because even within Catholic theology, there have been theologians that have argued that abortion is completely and can be totally morally accepted within the Catholic theological tradition. Abortion, not IVF, abortion. So let's dispense of this concept that there's like the religious view and then the like not religious. There is no set of agreed upon thinking on this. So why is it that our laws are reverting to restriction? This has often been an argument that I've made. When in doubt, I thought it was the case that in the United States, we would then preserve personal choice. It seems to me that we are very ready to do so, and that many of the abortion opponents are very ready to do so in a very extreme ways on issues that aren't at question. More guns equals more death, but we can't regulate guns, can we? I'm going to talk about the ghost gun case that the Fifth Circuit has decided that shocks the heck out of me, trying to gut ghost gun prohibitions. That is, you can't regulate guns at all because Second Amendment. But here where there's not agreement, where it's not fact, that there's no scientific consensus that that's when a human being exists. This, we revert to the most restriction. The philosophies just cannot be brought into harmony. But let's talk a little bit about the IVF process. By the way, the cost here is extraordinary. A single IVF process runs between $10,000 and $25,000. That's one cycle of IVF. What does in vitro fertilization mean? A woman will self-administer hormone injections for potentially quite a lengthy period of time until her IVF physician says, yep, you're ovulating. This is a really good time. Let's harvest eggs. The eggs are then examined, the best are picked, and then outside of the woman's body, her husband or partner makes a sperm donation, or she uses a sperm donor. The eggs are then fertilized by that sperm outside the body. Now you have a fertilized embryo. What do we do with it? And the complexities about what's going on here come, sometimes they're implanted nearly immediately. But again, the timing has to be exactly right. Again, there may be more hormone injections. It may be a few cycles before the woman's body is at its maximum state to receive a fertilized egg. And they often fertilize more than one egg at the time so that they can implant more than one egg at the time to increase the odds of conception. You still end up with effectively unused embryos. Apparently, according to Alabama, unused human beings. And they're then cryogenically frozen. And then families pay a cost to maintain those frozen embryos. They're frozen in dry ice. Very, very, like, super sub-zero. That's what happened in Alabama. Someone picked up a test tube. They got freezer burn on their hands and dropped it. This wasn't anybody trying to do anything bad. It was an accident. So people can maintain eggs for years. Some clinics have patients sign contracts that say that they can be destroyed after 3 years, or if you have an abnormal embryo, that it can be donated and used for scientific research. And for families, this is oftentimes an agonizing decision. But what the Alabama court is saying and what the Dobbs decision ultimately leads us to, which every abortion and choice opponent's logic leads us to, if conception means you have a human life, this is where we end up. Where families don't get to decide, where women are not equal to men because women can't control if they remain pregnant. Especially in the cases of rape or incest and failed birth control. This is where we end up. Bob from Madison, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Oh, wow. There's just so many thoughts that run through my mind, the scale and the size and so forth. I mean, how can you, something the size of a pea at 16 weeks is valued more than a woman? It doesn't make any sense. And are they going to give tax deductions for all these babies and everything? What if, I mean, you've got six fertilized eggs, IVF. Are you going to get six deductions on your tax return?
It's actually a really great question because, in fact, I believe in Alabama, embryos are now considered dependents. And if they're a dependent, you are presumptively getting a tax deduction under state law. What scary, slippery slope does that lead us down? I mean, you know, again, when you work these things out to their logical conclusion, the absurd place that you end up in is the first clue that you shouldn't be going down this road in the first place. That these decisions that are so intimate, about the most intimate elements of being a woman, a man, a family, a person, when does personhood begin? That these are not questions. This is the last place that the state should be inserting itself. Again, this is not an attack on religion. Believe whatever religion you want. But unlike the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, I believe that we live in a secular democracy and that our laws and our government should not be ruled by religion. And they don't mean religion as concept. They mean one religion. Fundamentalist, evangelical, Christian, nationalist, religious beliefs. Again, I believe in the freedom of religion and the freedom that I should have everywhere in this country over my body. We're going to be joined when we come back by my dear friend Colleen. We're going to hear about her and her family's experience with IVF and celebrate her pregnancy here on the Maggie Dawn Show. We'll be back with more in a moment. Keep it locked, everybody. So we've got a little bit of a cold return to the Maggie Dawn Show. Nobody worry about that. We'll sort it right out. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've been talking about IVF and all of the things that surround this topic following the Alabama Supreme Court's decision last Monday, effectively declaring that embryos are human beings and bringing a halt to many IVF and fertility treatments in the state of Alabama. I'm really humbled and excited and very pleased to be joined by one of my best friends in the whole wide world, Colleen. Thank you so much for coming on the Maggie Dawn Show. It's great to see you, and congratulations on the baby. Oh, can't hear you, Colleen. Can you turn around on you? Now try it.
All right. Can you hear me?
I can. Yay.
All right. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here. Always good to see you, Maggie, of course.
Yeah, I love you to bits, Col. And again, huge congratulations. You're a sister to me, and I'm so, so thrilled for you and Dele and your family that is now growing. How's it going? Are you feeling good? How are things?
Yeah. Not bad. Actually, today is 14 weeks. So officially out of the first trimester and into the second. I think I've had a pretty lucky pregnancy so far. A lot of nausea in the beginning, some fatigue, but that's it really. Like, no other issues. Baby's healthy. All of the checkups have been going well. So, I can't complain, but yeah, feeling pretty well.
Well, congratulations from me and my parents, especially Mike and Shirley, say they love you, and congratulations.
Of course. Love them back. We're excited to have baby girl meet their Aunt Maggie and mom and dad as well.
Oh, I'm so excited. I don't have any siblings. So to be Aunt Maggie, especially to your baby girl, Colleen, will be the privilege of a lifetime. I cannot wait. I wanted to bring you on because you're around my age. I've talked about my age. I'm not going to give yours, but I'm in my mid-40s. We went to college together, and you and Dele got married. You decided to try to start a family. Can you share with us a little bit, as you feel comfortable, nothing more, about your decision to engage in fertility treatments?
Yeah, I mean, given my age, you know, I'm not afraid to share. So, you know, got married at 45 and, you know, we immediately knew we wanted to have kids and started down that path. So, I mean, we just went to a fertility doctor right away. Like, we didn't really waste any time trying. And, you know, long and short, you know, my hormone levels were good, but very low, like at the tail end of being able to, you know, produce some eggs and, but otherwise very healthy. So we gave it several rounds of, what they call IUI. So think of more the turkey baster method, you know, there's not really much to it. You know, that didn't take. And then you move to the more traditional like IVF where they are harvesting, the eggs. And so for me, we tried that three times. And the first time we tried, we got an egg, but it wasn't mature. It wasn't viable. The second two times we, again, just got one egg each. We did get embryos from those. However, once they transplanted, it didn't take, and likely due to just the age of the egg that was coming, it just, you know, it wasn't going to come to fruition. So we, you know, at that point, the doctor's like, you could try another round, but it's going to be, you know, likely the same result. And the chances like decrease even further your months at this point, like a year later into it. So, you know, our options at that point were donor eggs, do nothing, or adoption. And so that was a really difficult decision because, you know, we ended up going the donor egg route, and it was an emotional decision. Cause like at the end of the day, it's not my DNA. It is my husband's DNA. I'm the one carrying the child, which gives me that connection. But, you know, it is a different scenario and one that initially I scratched off the list. I'm like, no, we're not doing that. And then, you know, assuming, of course, that things would work out the way I wanted them to, but it didn't. So we had to compromise on the approach we ended up with.
There's so much there, Colleen, that we could talk about for hours, yeah. The partnership, yeah, of a man and a woman in a marriage and the compromise and how intimate and personal and sometimes really gut-wrenching all of these decisions are. Just so people have some context, from the time you talked to your first fertility doctor after you guys got married, mm-hmm, until you got to the period where you said, we're going to talk about a donor egg, how long of a period of time are we talking about?
Let's see. We got married in October of
2021.
You were there. I can't remember myself.
Listen, I'll hold your veil in the cold anywhere, Colleen.
Time flies.
It does.
So that was October of 21. We moved to Arizona and then started. My first appointment with the fertility doctor was May of 22.
Wow.
So May of 22. And then, so about a year and a half before we made that decision to use donor eggs, and go that route.
And for each of the, egg harvestings, that was preceded by hormone injections, correct? Mm-hmm. And how was that for you physically going through those hormone injections? For a lot of women, it's really difficult.
Yeah. It's interestingly for me, I really didn't have any, side effects other than after about the third round of it. I would say maybe I had a weight gain of maybe 7 pounds in total, but like, Adele would probably say I was a little bit moody sometimes, but of course I'm not going to admit to that. But you know, I was pretty lucky. I know some of my friends who have been through it and I mean, they're in bed for several days, have really had adverse effects to the medication. I was pretty lucky that I didn't. So just a little bit of weight gain, some bloating, but that was really the primary side effects for me. I kept active. I think that helped.
Yeah.
I was, you know, constantly, you know, working out at least 5-6 days a week, you know, keeping active. So I do think that that does help.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you're basically the healthiest person that I know, Colleen, in terms of always maintaining a really good workout regimen and being really careful about what you eat and consume. And certainly from talking with you, that was even more the case as you guys were going through the hormone treatments. And most women that I know that have gone through IVF, there's an incredible amount of focus on the supplements in addition to the hormone therapy and what you're eating and exactly where your weight is. It's an all-encompassing, like every part of your physical body is basically like, is it as good as it possibly could be, which is its own version of stress in a way.
It's a lot. There's, I mean, at one point I'm trying to think between prescription and just over the counter vitamins and things like that. There might've been 10 or so different medications every day to manage, which like I had a spreadsheet. I would like cross off my mornings versus the evening pills. I was traveling with work as well. Wow. So having to make sure that I pack what I need and some of it needs to be refrigerated. So like, you know, buying the travel medication packs that are TSA approved and it can be a lot, but you know, I think if you just organize, that kind of becomes your routine like anything else and you get used to it. Each retrieval was a different set of protocols because they learn how your body reacts to the different medications, the amounts of the dosages of the medication. So every round was a little bit different. One round they had me on HGH. I'm like, sweet. Am I going to get, you know, like super buff muscles? They're like, no, you're not on enough to make that happen. I was like, dang it.
Just a little dose of the HGH.
Yeah, a little drop here and there.
Again, we could do a whole hour on our workout routines from back in the day.
Yes, yes.
So quite a process. And then how long ago was it? I know you've been pregnant for 14 weeks. How long ago was the donor egg retrieved? Did you get to choose the donor? How does that process work?
It's funny. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Kyle.
It's like online dating, picking your donor. So our doctor recommended two reputable places to choose from, and you literally go there. There's a profile picture, and you know, a lot of times they'll have numerous picture, and if they have had children before, they'll have pictures of their kids, so you can kind of see you know, what they look like as well. You just kind of keep swiping through. You check. You can narrow down to, you know, hair color, eye color, ethnicity, nationality, height, weight, you know, all of that stuff. So, you know, we ended up obviously wanted to have a donor that looked as close to me as possible and also had some of the, you know, ethnic traits or nationality traits that I have as well. Mm-hmm. So we found a woman. She was a 28 years old. She had three children. So that's what's called a proven donor. Because she's, you know, had children of her own. So her eggs work, you know, so to speak, is what they say. She has brown hair, green eyes, little freckles like I do. She's Irish, you know, Irish and German, which is also part of my heritage. So we ended up picking her to be our donor. And so, you literally just go through, read profiles. Once you pick a donor, they ensure that their genetic profile and my genetic profile and my husband's kind of all match up so that if there is a genetic abnormality that, you know, may just be on a recessive gene for me, but if it's also for her, then it can cause, you know, challenges. Or if it's on a, dominant.
Yes.
then it, you know, that could cause problems. So luckily, I had very few genetically anyways. Della had, you know, one or two that are very rare as well. So, you know, that those odds were pretty low.
Again, I'm so excited. Of course, no one could ever be as beautiful and charming and smart and lovely and talented as you, Colleen. But I'm glad that you got with Delay, pick someone that you both felt really comfortable with. Now, were you aware of the Alabama Supreme Court ruling when it came down? And did you have, and if you weren't, they've basically stopped IVF procedures in Alabama for all intents and purposes. And even women that were like, the next day is supposed to have an implantation. What are your feelings? What was your reaction after hearing about that?
Yeah, it's, you know, I feel for the women who were impacted by that situation. I know what it feels like, you know, to have your day of, you know, either retrieval or maybe transplant and it gets delayed. For me, it was oh, you have a polyp right where we need to inject. So yeah, it needs to be removed. You have to postpone this, which ends up being like 6 weeks when it's said and done. So obviously totally separate situation, but I can empathize with the disappointment of that excitement, that high, and then having to delay something. You know, I had to read into it a little bit and understand like what the court case was about. And, you know, understanding, unfortunately, somebody, right, if I have this right, an unauthorized person walked into an unauthorized room and destroyed some embryos. And that was kind of the impetus of the case, right? You know, and it's like, I can't agree with the ruling per se, because it sets the wrong precedent. I get it in the sense for those families who lost embryos, like those are their babies, you know, like obviously it's not life, but it's their children. So yes, they will get some type of relief or damage, but the overarching precedent that set is.
Would you call it wrong?
I would call it wrong. Yeah.
Listen, Colleen, I can't tell you thanks enough for sharing this part of your family's story with us and with everybody across the Civic Media Network. I love you to bits. My thanks. I'm going to call you tonight if you got time and we can catch up properly.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Would love to.
All right. I love you. My best to Dele as well. That's my dear friend Colleen here on the Maggie Dawn Show. We'll be back with more digging into this Alabama Supreme Court decision, basically making IVF inaccessible to hundreds of thousands of women across the state of Alabama. We'll be back with more in a minute. Keep it locked, everybody. In the work, they wouldn't shake their heads and question how much of this I deserve. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I was just joined by my dear friend Colleen, who went through the IVF procedures and cycles and hormone therapies and is now pregnant with an egg that was donated to her and her family. So quite a process, quite a journey. One thing that Colleen has shared with me, and I know she wouldn't mind if I shared here, is that her employer had really generous benefits, covering her IVF treatments, not entirely, but a large portion of what is an extremely expensive process. And listen, if we step back and look at this, one of the risks is not just that IVF disappeared in Alabama almost overnight and still is sort of up in the air. It's that to the extent that it exists in places like Alabama, because this will be precedent setting, as Colleen said, and other states that frankly do not have what I would call balance within their state governments and people to say, listen, we don't live in a religious democracy. It's a secular democracy, and leave your religions in your own families and in your own homes and in your own places of worship. It doesn't belong in our laws, in our courtrooms. That other states will follow. And even if IVF can be restarted in some way, shape, or form, it will become exorbitantly expensive. That's one of the, so for middle-class folks or folks that don't have really good, rich benefits from their employers, that is no longer an option, which is frankly harrowing, scary to me for a whole gamut of reasons. And I haven't gotten yet to the people who go through cancer treatments and may have their fertility impacted, both women and men, who have been advised by their doctors to have sperm or eggs harvested and stored, and sometimes fertilized eggs, a fertilized egg, meaning an embryo. That's that's now up for grabs. So causing so much pain for so many people. Again, more expensive, employers less apt to cover it, if at all, in states where it is effectively de facto banned. Again, cancer patients, there's the stem cell sort of iteration here, which is absolutely a core building block of most cancer research, by the way, as well as a huge, huge array of various other medical science. But this is the logical outcome. If life begins at conception, this is where you end up. There's no ifs, ands, buts, however's, but nope, this is where we end up. Jack from Merrimack, you're on the Maggie Don Show. What say you?
Well, first of all, IVF is an incredibly useful and necessary medical procedure for women that are in the position of a very dear friend of mine, whom I've known for 50 years, literally. She and her slightly younger husband decided to have a child when she was 50. And it took them a couple of tries, but they succeeded. And they're very, very happy. They have now a boy who is, I think he's in his freshman year at UW-Madison. So, people that want children, this is incredibly important for.
Yes.
It's kind of unfair that men in their 50s can provide half of the genetics, but women in their 50s can't, in a way.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jack. And my hat's off to you for even saying that. I think a lot of men, sometimes it's so much of our public discourse is framed from a man's perspective because most of our elected officials and leaders are men, that I really want to lift up and thank Jack for putting out the, hey, there's an innate unfairness here. And while women's fertility has taken like huge leaps forward, and this all is part of it, we still aren't equally able to procreate for the length of time that the other gender is. So again, unless we're going to interrogate men and their intentions and the way that we interrogate women and their intentions when it comes to pregnancy and all of these matters intimate, you know, it leads us to a scary place. Just a couple of facts here. In 2021, this is based on CDC data, just under 250,000 patients had just under 500,000 ART cycles, which is sort of a technical term for the IVF cycles, performed at just under 500 clinics across the United States, which resulted in 97,128 live-born infants. It's 100,000 infants a year, largely creditable to IVF treatments, which Alabama premised on the federal Supreme Court's ruling in Dobbs, might now not happen because this is but not an if, it's a but when other states that already have restricted abortion so severely start making this inaccessible. Because if life begins at conception, this is where we end up, folks. You cannot get away from that eventuality. Listen, when we come back and in this next hour, I'm going to stitch together all of the recent political events over the last 3 days. I'm going to talk about Katie Britt and why what she had to say is relevant to this debate. In fact, what she had to say is so disgusting and disturbing as relevant to this debate. I'm going to talk about another wackadoo representative from the U.S. Congress and how she, I don't even know what the heck she's talking about when it comes to these issues. But most importantly, when we come back after the top of the hour, where you're going to hear sports, news, and the weather, I'm going to lean into the Alabama Supreme Court's Chief Justice, because you are not going to believe what this crackpot has had to say. Just a little teaser, folks. He used to work for Alabama Supreme Court Justice Roy Moore, who liked to entrap and entice girls under the age of 16 into sexual relationships. Allegedly. But if that's your mentor, I wonder where this is going to end up. You're not going to want to miss it when we come back at the top of the hour after news, weather, and sports here on the Maggie Don Show. I'm so sick of them coming at me again. 'Cause if I was a man,
and I'd be the man. Put in the work, they wouldn't shake their heads and question how much of this I deserve, what I was wearing, if I was rude, could I be separated from my good ideas and power moves, and they would toast to me, or let the players play, I'd be just like Leo in Saint-Tropez. I'm so sick of running as fast as I can.